The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by HubSpot. Imagine growing a business with high-quality leads, fast-closing deals, and wildly happy customers. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
LinkedIn presents.
It's not enough to tell a story. The way you tell one makes a difference in the experience. Storytelling is an art grounded in science. There's fundamental ways our brains interact with and process information. Each plays a role in our survival, understanding, communications, and decision-making. They also impact how we interact with stories.
Hi, it's Wednesday, and this is the Next Big Idea Daily. I'm your host, Michael Kovnat. Are you a good storyteller? Whether you think you are or not, the ability to tell a good story is more than just a social skill. It's a key element in good leadership, connection, and influence, which can help you creatively and professionally as much as personally. There's an art to being a good storyteller, an art you can learn in the new book, The Perfect Story, How to Tell Stories That Inform, Influence, and Inspire by Karen Eber. Karen is a consultant and speaker, and she joins us now to share some of her big ideas.
We are not hardwired for stories. If we were, every story we experience would be captivating. And we've all sat through enough bad stories to know that isn't true. It's like saying you're hardwired to run a marathon. You have the physical components, but if you don't prepare them, you'll be in a world of hurt. The same is true for stories. Just because you have physical pieces that can be dynamically engaged through stories doesn't mean they are in every story. It's not enough to tell a story. The way you tell one makes a difference in the experience. Storytelling is an art grounded in science. There's fundamental ways our brains interact with and process information. Each plays a role in our survival, understanding, communications, and decision-making. They also impact how we interact with stories. I call these the five factory settings of the brain. Factory setting one. Your brain is lazy. It wants to conserve calories to keep you alive. Factory setting two. It makes assumptions and predictions so it can respond and conserve calories instead of react. Factory setting three. It organizes your long-term memory into a library of files of knowledge and experiences. Factory setting four. It seeks belonging in in-groups or notes differences from out-groups. Factory setting five. It seeks pleasure and avoids pain. Let's explore these a bit further to give them more meaning. Think of those days when you turn on a favorite show or movie because you just don't want to think, or your mind drifts off in a meeting while someone's speaking. This is because of the first factory setting, your brain is lazy. The brain has one goal, and that's to get you through the day alive. To keep you alive, it uses 20% of your body's overall calories, the most of any organ. The majority are spent making predictions for things like how to move your body when you're standing up from a chair. Your brain is a stingy banker that never wants to go bankrupt of calories. What this means for stories and communication is that your brain is always looking for opportunities to conserve calories. As Dr. Paul Zak once said to me, your audience is either going to listen or read what you've created or watch cat videos. Stories that don't include specific details or build tension or include conflict, they can cause the brain to drift off. Your brain also hates for things to be incomplete. Do you know how you guess the ending of a movie or a book, or you anticipate what someone's going to say in a meeting or a conversation? This is because of the second factory setting. Your brain makes assumptions. The faster the brain makes assumptions and predictions about what will happen, the faster it can conserve calories. In stories, this means we either need to slow down these assumptions by putting in unexpected details, including tension and unexpected plot points, or we lean into them and make them even more dynamic with vivid descriptions. Our brain's ability to make assumptions and predictions is because of our third factory setting. We have this library of files of knowledge and experiences. When we take in information through our senses, these experiences get stamped with emotions and stored in our long-term memory. It's a bit like when you take a photo on your phone. You swipe up and you can see it's automatically been stamped with the date, the location, the f-stop, the aperture. Our experiences are stamped with emotions, and then they're stored in our long-term memory. Our brain scans this library of files of experiences to make predictions and assumptions. When we tell a story, we want to engage the senses and emotions of the audience. This not only helps them feel immersed in the story, it lets the story be stored as a part of their long-term memory and then used in future assumptions. The fourth factory setting leans into the natural grouping our brain does, seeking in groups of people or groups that have similar likes, interests, values, or even aspirations, or noticing when it feels different as a member of an outgroup. The charity that tells the story of one person after a natural disaster, they're using outgroups. You hear how this person lost their home and they're struggling to get clothing, food, electricity, all while you're sitting in a home with air conditioning and food nearby. You recognize how different your circumstances are, and you're often inspired to donate. When you tell stories, you have a choice to make on if you're telling a story that makes people feel a part of something as an in-group or something that helps them notice how different they are as the out-group. The fifth factory setting is at our most basic level. We seek pleasure and we avoid pain. Cortisol and adrenaline are released to help us focus and avoid pain or danger. Serotonin, dopamine, and oxytocin are released in these moments of connection, bonding, and even feel-good moments. We experience each of these different types of neurochemicals through stories. When telling a story, you have a choice to make if you're telling a feel-good story, an uncomfortable story, or both. The five factory settings of the brain help you understand how someone engages with a story, but more importantly, it helps you consider what to include in your stories to make sure the audience is immersed. Building a toolkit of endless ideas helps make sure you can find the right story to tell for each audience. The best time to come up with a potential story is when you don't need it. This is when your brain is the most relaxed and does its best thinking. You want to come up with a list of ideas that you can consult anytime you need to tell a story. The best story ideas come from constraints. If I asked you to describe your childhood, you'd likely describe the city you grew up in, maybe the type of housing you had, and what family members were around. Your response would be general because childhood is broad. There's endless stories and experiences. And that question, it's too vague to prompt thinking. But if I asked you what sound or smell reminds you of home, that would prompt endless stories. The constraint tells your brain which file in your library of files to access. To come up with ideas, start with your experiences. Think of your professional experiences, your first job, a mistake, a failure, something you're proud of. As you get ideas, jot them down. You're not writing the full story, you're capturing those ideas so you can look at them later. Think through your personal life. What's something you should have thrown out or gotten rid of, but you've held on to it? What's a hidden talent of yours? Expand this to include things that fascinate you in the world. Museums, articles, podcasts. Make a list of ideas that come up. Expand this to include things that fascinate you in the world. Museums, articles, podcasts. You want to make a list of ideas that come up. The goal is to capture as many different ideas as you can without worrying about how you'll use them. You'll look through this list when you have an opportunity to tell a story and pick which one will help you build the outcome you want for your audience. Data never speaks for itself. There is often bias in business to favor data over stories. However, it isn't an either-or decision. Stories connect your audience to the data and help them understand it. If I showed a group an image of an ink blot, each person would have a different interpretation of it. Someone might see a mouse, others might see a skeleton. It's because our brain is making assumptions trying to discern the image. These assumptions draw upon each person's library of files. This means there's different interpretations because we all have different experiences. The same thing happens when we put up data. We each make different assumptions about it and have different interpretations, often without realizing it. You've likely experienced this in meetings when there's a debate about the quality of data, the source, or even what it means. When you don't tell the story of the data, you risk everyone having a different interpretation. It's impossible to have a discussion or make a data-informed decision when everyone has a different understanding of the data. A podcast host once said to me, "Some people avoid telling stories because data can be shared quickly. Stories require work. Just because it's easy to share information doesn't mean the audience understands or remembers it. The audience isn't as close to the data and needs guidance to understand it. Storytelling with data begins before you collect the data. People often gather reams of data and start picking pieces of it. It's a bit like defining the scientific hypothesis for your experiment after you conduct it. More data isn't better, more is more and confuses the audience. Start with the problem you're trying to solve before you gather the data. Then as you gather the data, lay out the story of what you've learned. Not every piece of data needs a story. If you have a regular meeting to review a dashboard, you might not need a story each week. But when you start to notice outliers in what you're monitoring, tell those stories. Focus on yourself or fail to plan, and your story can go wrong. One of the common storytelling mistakes is telling the story we want to tell and not the story the audience needs to hear. These are our greatest hits. We love to tell them. The problem is we forget to make them relatable to the audience. It's like the uncle at the holiday table. And it's always the uncle, isn't it? You don't even need to be present. He's just telling that same story on repeat for himself. Stories begin with the audience and not the idea. You have to get clear on what you want your audience to think or feel after the story. You want to plan out what you want them to know or do. Think about where their mindset is today and what might be an obstacle in what you want them to know, think, feel, or do. Your story starts here because this makes sure your message is focused on the audience. Start with the idea and you're talking at them instead of engaging them. Each time you tell a story, it's going to be different because each audience is different. Because of this, stories always start with the audience. Another common mistake is people starting to tell a story without planning any basic structure around it. It looks a little bit like this. It was Tuesday and I was on my way to meet my friend and I was running late and It was Monday because I remember I was really tired from the weekend and I think it was Tuesday. These stories are rambling and hard to follow. The lazy brain kicks in while you're trying to remember what day of the week it was or what color top you're wearing. Detail's not even important to the story. Take a few minutes to structure the idea and structure the story, and it makes it not only easier for you to tell, but for the audience to listen. A third common mistake is that people just don't leave themselves enough time to work on a story. A story on a one-on-one can be told on the fly, but if you're giving a presentation, you need to spend time planning it. Many people spend hours tinkering with slides and spend 5 minutes thinking about what they'll say. Flip that. A bit of planning and structure makes all the difference in how your story lands. Telling great stories isn't about finding the perfect story. They aren't sitting on a shelf waiting for you to select them. They're developed from within you. It's finding the ideas you have and shaping them into the perfect story for each audience. I believe that anyone can learn to become a great storyteller. I got started at 5 years old. I have a brown eye and a green eye, and I've always loved my eyes. They make me feel special. For as long as I can remember, I've been known as the girl with different colored eyes. People are more inclined to remember my different colored eyes than to remember my name. But as much as I love them, I realized people didn't know what to make of them. I could tell the exact moment when someone would notice. Their words would slow and stop, their eyes darting back and forth from my right to my left. I braced myself for what always came next. Hey, did you know you have two different colored eyes? Sometimes for fun, I'd put my hands on my chest and say, no, really? They'd call other people over. You've got to see her eyes. Then the questions would begin. What color eyes do your parents have? Do you see the same colors out of each eye? Do your eyes give you special powers? This was the moment that made everything uncomfortable. Everyone was staring at me, looking rapidly from one eye to the other. I felt like a sideshow act expected to perform a trick. I was being viewed as weird and different for the things I love about myself. I hated these moments. They always left me feeling depleted. One day, I was frustrated by the pelting of questions and decided to shift the energy with this story. I was born with brown eyes. Around the age of 4, I was coloring in my room one night. I was getting hungry and dinner wasn't going to be for a few more hours. You know that box of crayons we all had, where you throw in the perfect ones, the peeled ones, the broken ones? I reached into the box and pulled out a green crayon. I sniffed it and it didn't really smell like much. I took a nibble and I was surprised how much I liked the taste, so I ate it. And I reached in the box and pulled out another green crayon and ate it. I ate every green crayon in the box until they were gone. The next day I woke up, my left eye was green. And then I would be quiet. People would look at me with these sideways looks, skepticism, arched eyebrows, trying to make sense of if I was serious or not. I'd let them off the hook and say, no, of course I didn't eat the crayons, and we'd laugh. But more importantly, it created a shift away from me and onto the story. I didn't feel depleted. Instead of stares and scrutiny, I got laughters and smiles. The story often inspired apologies once people realized the silly questions they asked. The conversation always transitioned to a meaningful connection, one I doubt we would have had without the story. People have remembered the story for over 30 years, commenting they think of me when they see crayons. It turns out my eyes did give me a special power of storytelling. They taught me how to use stories to entertain, engage, inform, and even refocus attention. They let me influence and inspire behavior, leaving people changed as a result.
Thank you, Karen. All right, everyone. I hope these ideas will help sharpen your storytelling skills. Tomorrow, we're going to hear from Denise Hamilton, author of the new book, Indivisible, How to Forge Our Differences into a Stronger Future. I'm Michael Kovnat. See you tomorrow.